our last talk of the conference. Martin is going to tell us about minimal surfaces in ADS space.
Okay, thank you. I wanted first to start by thanking the organizers, especially Spiro and Pedro, for putting together this very nice conference and allowing me to present this work. And I learned many new things. I think even one of the problems of speaking towards the end is that you may think that I put together my talk by stealing pieces of all the, some of the other speakers, but the thing is just that there are many things related to what other people talked about. So this is work related to minimal area surfaces as the main topic of to show how Riemann theta functions allows you to find these minimal area surfaces, and the Wilson loops are the motivation for this work. And okay, so let me start with the summary. The introduction is going to briefly motivate this idea by looking at the string gauge theory duality, also known as the ADS-CFT correspondence. And in this duality, the minimal area surfaces that we are interested in, which are living hyperbolic space, are related to some observables in gauge theory, which are important physically, which are called the Wilson loops. But I will use this just as a motivation, and once I have to study minimal area surfaces, I will start by looking at examples that were already known. These surfaces end, so you give some boundary curve, and the surface has to end in this boundary, and it has to have minimal area. I'm going to consider the case where this boundary is a circle, or two parallel lines, or an angle, also called a cusp. And these will be simple examples. After that, I'm going to consider some new examples, which were we found based on some mathematical work related to Willmore surfaces, which I'm going to remind you what it is. And there are different ways. This system is an integrable system, and there are different ways in which you can try to solve these equations. One is using the dressing method, which I'm going to describe first. Then one can use Riemann theta functions, and I'm going to describe that too. And then I'm going to show how to compute the area. And at the end, I'm going to show how to compute surfaces that end in more than one curve. So in particular, I'm going to consider a surface ending in two curves. And in the physical terms, that's the correlators of Wilson loops. And I will end with some numerical approach to the problem, which we can use to check some of the analytical results. Okay, so briefly, this string gauge theory duality is a relation between gauge theories and string theory that was already considered by Toft in the 70s, but it was made precise by Maldacena and Gapser, Klevan, and Polyakov more recently, and goes by the name of ADS-CFT correspondence. The idea is there is some parameter, which is called the Toft coupling, which is, if it's small, the gauge theory is a simple description of the system. When lambda is large, this description becomes complicated, and you can do an alternative description in terms of string theory, where the string lives in a space of very small curvature. And that way, you can do computations here that you couldn't do there. And each observable here has some observable there which are dual to each other, and you can use one to compute the other and vice versa. Now, the interesting thing is that the gauge theory lives in the usual 3+1 dimensional space, but the string theory lives in curved space, which is S5 times ADS5. So S5 is just a 5-dimensional sphere, and ADS5 is this hyperboloid, which is in mathematics called a hyperbolic space. And let me remind you some simple idea of what hyperbolic space is. The most well-known case is the Lobachevsky plane, also called the Poincaré plane or the Poincaré disk. And the Poincaré disk meet Sever on Saturday, had this very famous drawing by Escher with an artistic interpretation of this Poincaré disk. The Poincaré plane is a half plane, coordinates x and z, with this simple metric. And it's a well-known result that if you have 2 points in the boundary and you want to go from one to the other, the geodesic is not a straight line, but it's a half circle, or between any 2 points in hyperbolic space. And this is if you have 3 of these geodesics, or they define a triangle, and it's a famous result that the sum of the angles is less than pi. So that's the property of hyperbolic geometry. If you add more coordinates, then you get higher dimensional ADS space in what's called a Poincaré coordinates. This is ADS5. And for the purpose of my talk, I'm going to keep only here three of these coordinates. So I'm going to consider ADS3 subspace. In this language, this would be ADS2. And okay, maybe I should say that the main purpose is to, when I add one dimension here, so let's say x2, x3, and z, instead of consider two points and the minimal curve, I will consider a curve in the boundary and the minimal area surface. So it will be a directionalization of this problem. And why I'm interested in curves? Well, in the gauge theory part of the duality, there is an operator associated with a curve, which is called the Wilson loop. And in mathematical terms, you have a gauge field or a connection, and you compute the holonomy or the integral around this loop. And that's called the Wilson loop. And in the particular case of the supersymmetric series that one considers, one has to add a scalar field here that makes this quantity locally supersymmetric. Now, it's invariant under different supersymmetries in different points of the Wilson loop, so the Wilson loop is not supersymmetric. And the problem of computing this is that you have to compute not this integral, but the average over all possible connections with a measure that is not completely well-defined. It's called the path integral, and that is the problem of computing this observer. It can only be defined perturbatively, and so it can only be computed in the case of small coupling, which in the previous language was this soft coupling. Now, the ADS-50 correspondence allows you to compute the same observable as strong coupling by obtaining an observable related to a curve in the string side of the correspondence. And the observable is simply that you have to draw the curve in the boundary of this Poincaré space. This is the coordinate z that I had before. And you have to find a surface of minimal area that ends on that curve. And the area of the surface gives you the expectation value of the Wilson loop in the string side of the correspondence. Now, for that reason, it's an important problem or interesting problem to take a curve in the boundary and find the minimal area surface that ends in that curve, as I said. But for simple, smooth curves like the one I draw before, like this, the only surface that was known is the case where the boundary was a disk, a circle, and the surface was a half sphere. Has this very simple equation, and it's completely analogous to the Lobachevsky plane. As I told you here, you have the geodesic is a circle. The minimal area surface is a half sphere. And this was studied by many people, and there are many very interesting results related to the circle. But the purpose of this talk is to generalize this circle to other curves which are non-symmetric. Generically, this is a very simple function. This will be non-trivial functions of both coordinates, x and y. And I'm also going to consider the case where you have two curves with some non-trivial shapes. Now, before doing that, let me mention that if you allow for infinite curves, or curves that go all the way to infinity, you have a simple example of two parallel lines. If x is the direction perpendicular to the lines, the height, z, will be just a function of x. And that was done by Maldacena, Ray, and Yi. If you have a cusp or an angle, by scaling symmetry, z will be proportional to the distance to the origin, the height, and then will be some non-trivial function of the angle, and that was done by Dracker, Gross, and Oguri. And the common feature of all these surfaces is that you have only one function of one variable, and then you get a differential equation that you can integrate by quadratures. So the surface that I'm going to describe today are non-trivial functions of both coordinates, so they are slightly more difficult to find. I also should mention that there are many other cases that people have studied which are slightly different. One is the case of this scalar that I mentioned is part of the definition of the Wilson loop. It can change with the position as you move along the curve, and that was observed by Zarembo, and you can have Wilson loops in that way that can be computed. And more recently, as Amit was discussing on Saturday, and Pedro and Amit and collaborators did a very impressive work related to the computation of Wilson loops with lie-like casts. But so there is a lot of work, which I'm not going to touch today on, but I'm going to concentrate on simple closed curves, which are smooth, no cusps, or anything like that. And the result will be that we can provide an infinite parameter family of examples, which are the solutions are based on Riemann theta functions. And we can compute the area of these surfaces by integrating some function along the worksheet boundary. So the worksheet, we have the topology of a disk. So it will be very similar to this, to the half sphere, but deformed. And an integral over the boundary will give us the area. And that you can use theta functions to solve the equations of motions of the string was already observed by various different groups in this related context, Kazakov, Marshakov, Minahan, and Sarembo, Dori, and Vicedo, Sakai, Sato. And in the mathematical literature, these solutions to a minimal area surface problem in ADS was proposed also with this Riemann theta function by Babich and Bobenko. So we just took those results and applied it to a particular problem of finding a surface that ends on a closed, simple closed curves. Okay, and why were these mathematicians interested in this problem? They have a different motivation. It was actually previous to the ADS-CFT, it was around 91. And the idea is that they are, these surfaces are related to something called Wilmore surfaces, which goes as follows. So suppose you have this ADS space that I mentioned before, the hyperbolic space, and you have a minimal area surface there, and now you erase the z square in the denominator. Then you have the ordinary Euclidean space that we live in, and you have a surface inside it. And you can ask yourself what property does that surface have. And what the property that it has is that it minimizes something called the Wilmore functional. So let me remind you what this is. If you have a surface in ordinary space, you have a normal, and then you have a set of planes along this that contain this normal, and they intersect the surface. And there is an osculating circle that approximates this the best. And the radius of the circle is called the radius of curvature. And as you rotate the plane, you have a minimum and a maximum that are called the principal curvatures. If you multiply them, you get the Gauss curvature. And if you add them, OK, there is a 2 here, is you get what's called the mean curvature. And if you integrate with differential of area the difference of curvature squared, you get what's called the Wilmore functional. So minimizing this functional tries to make the two curvatures equal. So it tries to make the surface as round as possible. And the sphere obviously has the two curvatures equal, so this is 0. And so and this has to be positive. So the sphere is a minimum of this functional, and that's why the half sphere has minimal area in ADS space. Actually, when you erase z, now you can take z positive and negative, so you can glue the two half spheres and get a whole sphere. And this function that you want to make things round appears also, for example, in the cell, the dynamics of cell membranes. So you have a term proportional to the area and a term proportional to this Wilmore functional. It also can appear in computer graphics when you want to interpolate some surface, but I don't know very much about those things, but it appears in other contexts too. And the other thing that you can see here is that it's scale invariant. So if you take a surface and you scale it, the area goes like the length square, but the curvature goes like 1/length. So here you have 1/length square, so this Wilmore functional doesn't change. And that's the same property that the area in ADS space has. If I scale all these coordinates, the metric doesn't change. So if I have a surface in ADS and I expand it, the area doesn't change. So it has the same property as the Wilmore function. In fact, the Wilmore function evaluated in flat space is equal to the area evaluated to the finite part of the area, as I'm going to describe later, evaluated in ADS. OK, and the motivation in mathematics was besides the sphere, you want to find, for example, surfaces with the topology of a torus that minimizes this functional, and that's called Wilmore tori. And they did that by taking two of these surfaces in ADS and gluing them together in the same way as I mentioned you can do with the sphere. OK, so I finished more or less with the motivation. And now I'm going to describe how this you can find these surfaces. So you have to write the equations of motion. And you can do this. These are x, y, and z, which now are capital, but it's the same as before, are the Poincaré coordinates. And these are called embedding coordinates. As I remind you, this is also the equation for ADS. And one can write a functional, which is, well, this is not the area, but if you impose this constraint, minimizing this functional is equivalent to minimizing the area. And you have these equations of motion that follow from this action. So you have to solve these equations with this constraint. And the constraint and also the equations, because of this relation here, are nonlinear. So it's a non-trivial problem to solve. However, the problem is integrable. And one can see that by constructing a flat connection, as was described in many of the previous talks, for different systems. And in this case, it works as follows. So you construct a matrix with this axis. And this matrix is a motion generic Hermitian matrix. And the determinant is 1 because of the constraint of being in ADS. And you can construct this current, which you can see that is flat by construction because it's a pure gauge in physical parlance or whatever. And the equation of motion tells you that the dual, the Hodge dual, the differential is 0. So it's a closed form. And using these two properties, one can construct this form A, which is closed for any, so it's flat, sorry, obeys this equation for any value of the parameter lambda. In particular, if lambda is equal to minus 1, A is 0. And if lambda is equal to 1, A is just J. But for all other values of lambda, this is flat, and that was in a similar context, was observed by Kazakov, Minahan, Marshakov, and Zarembo, and Vena, Polchinski, and Roy Ban for the most generic case in ADS5 process 5 with the fermions and everything. Okay, so if this A is flat, then one can find another matrix psi that obeys this equation. So this is a differential with respect to Z and Z bar. So Z and Z bar are the parameters of the worksheet, and we want to find X as a function of Z as Z bar, maybe I should have said. So this derivative, so you parameterize the surface as X as a function of Z and Z bar, and these are the equations. So these differentials are all with respect to Z and Z bar. Lambda is a parameter. So this equation can be integrated because of A being flat. And in particular, if lambda is minus 1, I say that A is 0, so psi should be constant, and I can take it equal to the identity. If lambda is 1, then psi is, A is equal to J, and then psi of 1 will be just X. And then I can try to find psi for other values of lambda. And the dressing method proposed by Sakharov and Mikhailov, 70s or 80s, tells you that you can find a matrix chi that if you multiply psi by chi, you get some psi tilde that allows you to define a new flat connection like this. This connection, you can find chi so that this connection can be written exactly in the same way as the original A, but with new values of J. And because of what I discussed before, these new values, new J's, will define some new X that also is a solution of the equation of motion. But of course, it's non-trivial to find some chi here that when you compute A, the dependence in lambda is exactly the same as this, because all this is independent of lambda. But this was a problem solved by Sakharov and Mikhailov, and the proposal is if you ask that chi has a single pole in the complex plane lambda, you can write this chi in this way, where this P is a projector. So if you follow their recipe, you find the new solutions, but the only caveat that you have is that the determinant of X, which will be the determinant of psi times the determinant of this chi, it turns out to be minus 1. So you have a solution in this space, which in physics is called the De Sitter space. It's a hyperbolic, but with another sign here. So this is not really a problem, because I can apply the dressing method twice, and then I will get back to the case of this spin plus 1. So this is a good way to find solutions, but perhaps you realize here, obviously, that I need some solution to start with. So I need some X and construct some psi, and then I can dress it as it's called and get new solutions. And the only solution with a closed curve that I discussed was a circle. And it turns out that if I apply this dressing method to the circle, I get back the circle. So I don't get anything new. So one should look for some other solutions. And this is what we did with my student, former student, Riegi Shiseki, and my student, Sana Siama, there at Purdue. And if you have this solution, then you can apply the dressing method to them, and we are looking a little bit into that. But today I'm just going to describe how to find these solutions. As I say, it's based on the methods of many other people before or what we did. So the first thing is to take X, and X has to be Hermitian, and we can solve this constraint by writing X as AA dagger, which is obviously Hermitian. And the advantage is that we can write equations for A, and we don't need to be worried about the reality conditions for A. A can be any complex matrix. If you do this, there is an obvious symmetry that if I multiply A by some SU2 matrix, this matrix goes away because it gets U and U dagger, which is 1, so it gives the same X. So there is a local symmetry that I can multiply A by an arbitrary SU2 matrix, which means that I have extra degrees of freedom. But okay, we're going to use that later. So for the moment, we can construct the currents again with A instead of X. And if you combine them in this form, you get that A and B obey the so-called Hitchin equations that actually were discussed right in the previous talk. And this A, under this local symmetry, transforms as a Higgs field or a matter field, and B transforms as a gauge field or as a connection. And essentially, the field strength here, or the curvature, is proportional to the commutator of A and A dagger. And these are constraints from being SU2 matrices and the conformal constraints. But if you look at A, A is a 2x2 matrix, because these A's are 2x2 matrices, and they're but complex. So it has 8 real parameters. And these two complex equations eliminate 4 parameters, so A has only 4 degrees of freedom. But since there is this local symmetry, there are 3 parameters in SU2, so I can eliminate 3 of the 4. So A has only 1 real actual degree of freedom. And using the symmetry, one can write A in the following way. So this matrix sigma plus is 0, 1, 0, 0. It's one of these Pauli matrices here. And alpha is the only real, is a real function of Z and Z bar, which is the only actual degree of freedom that A has. And if you compute B from these equations, you see that the B can only take this form, where this is the same alpha, and this is an arbitrary holomorphic function. And this was some question on Saturday, I believe. How do you get a holomorphic function? It appears from here, from this equation. And Amit was considering the case where f of z has zeros, in particular, it's a polynomial of certain degree. In this talk, I'm going to consider the case where f has no zeros. And in that case, one can do a change of coordinates or reparameterize the worksheet instead of z using some omega in such a way that f gets set to 1. And that's the only case I'm going to consider. And a can also be multiplied by an arbitrary complex number constant of modulus 1, because in these equations are linear in A. And if lambda has modulus 1, it will cancel here. So I introduce some parameter lambda here, which is called the spectral parameter. In particular, it can be any complex number, but only when it has modulus 1, you get an actual solution of the original equations. If not, you get some solution which can be interesting to compute some other things, but not the actual physical solution. And this A still has to obey some equation from the equations for A and B, and this is a Koch-Gordon equation. So this procedure that I just summarized is called the Pollmeyer reduction, and then it goes as follows. So if you run it backwards, you first solve the Koch-Gordon equation, you replace the expressions for A and B, and therefore for J and J bar. And if I remind you, the definition of J is A minus 1 dA, so you get this equation and this equation, which now are understood as equations for A. So you have a nonlinear equation for one function, and now you have a linear equation for a matrix A. You solve for A, and you reconstruct the solution X. And if you want, you can compute also the flat current in terms of A. So using J, and which I call J1 and J2, J and J dagger, you can construct a flat current, which is a form that Amit was showing on Saturday also. So my talk is very much related, obviously, to what he said. And this he called phi and phi bar, and this is, I don't remember, but this is the expression of the same current, and you can do all the dressing method in these terms of this A, which if you obey this self-duality condition and this that this is flat for any value of lambda, is completely equivalent to the equations of motion. And also, if you look here, one can look at what these A's are, and one can see that A has this property, which gives a reality condition for A or for the solutions psi. Okay, so now let me present the solutions to this equation. So we have to solve for alpha and then for A. and reconstruct x, y, and z, and you find that these solutions look like this. These are theta functions. The dependence on z and z bar is in these exponentials. I don't know if you can see, maybe a bit small here, but and on zeta here, is these are vectors, and z bar are the worksheet coordinates. And now I'm going to describe in detail how one gets these solutions, but I just wanted to show the result. It could be considered complicated or not, depends on what you think, but it's certainly an analytic expression for these surfaces. And I'm going to also give examples and some things later. Okay, so this is something also that it was discussed many times in these talks, but let me remind you once again what these Riemann surfaces and theta functions are. So a Riemann surface is a sphere with handles, and you have two types of cycles, the A's and B's. In particular, I'm going to consider a hyperelliptic Riemann surface where you have a C2, two complex numbers, and this equation, mu squared equals to some polynomial on lambda, the degree of the polynomial determines the genus of this surface. And you have some holomorphic differentials that you can write and are normalized by their integrals around some cycles, let's say A, and then the integral around cycles B give you a matrix that was already proven by Riemann, is symmetric, and the imaginary part is positive definite. And therefore, one can write this Gaussian sum. It will all be convergent for any value of zeta. This pi, this matrix, will be considered fixed, and zeta will be considered the argument of the function zeta. So zeta or zeta is a vector of g complex numbers. And I'm summing over all integers, positive and negative here. So, and this obviously can be defined for any function, for any matrix pi, as long as the imaginary part is positive definite. But if it comes from a Riemann surface, in particular a hyperelliptic Riemann surface, this theta function has some interesting properties. So the only thing I'm using the Riemann surface here is to put this matrix pi. But if it comes from a Riemann surface, as I say, it obeys some particular properties. In particular, they solve the sine Gordon equation or the complex, I mean, these are just complex continuation, analytic continuations of the sine Gordon, Sinch Gordon and Cosh Gordon, which is the one we're interested in. So our approach is simply to use these functions as special functions in the same way as you use sine, cosine, or exponential to solve a harmonic oscillator or Klein Gordon or something like that. Now, although the Riemann theta functions were obviously known for a long time, some of these properties were more recent. So, in particular, there is a property, the trisecant identity, proved by Fay in the 70s. And this is the identity that you need to use to prove that the theta functions obey this equation. So, it's a relatively more recent result. And so this identity relates this function for any value of zeta, and these integrals are between some arbitrary points 1, 2, 3, and 4 on the Riemann surface. So for a path between 1 and, well, I don't know, 2 and 1, there are g omegas, and therefore you get g numbers that you can add to zeta, and this is what happens. And these gammas are generalization of the cross ratios. So in the sphere, this will be just cross ratios, and this is a generalization of that to the arbitrary Riemann surface. And the power of this identity is that you can take derivatives, and okay, it doesn't really matter, it gets a little bit messy, but you just can construct a table of derivatives in the same way as sine derivative cosine and so on. Here you get the first derivative and the second derivative. There is one caveat, derivative P1 doesn't mean derivative with respect to P1, it just means derivative, a gradient of the function in the direction determined by the omega at P1. And in that way, you get a table of derivatives. With these derivatives, you can replace, as a traditional in physics, you replace in the equations, because the equation looks like this derivative expressions, and then you adjust the constants until you find the solution to the equation. Now that's the method we use to check that all this was correct. In particular, you want to solve the Cosh-Gordon equation. You can see here derivative of the log of theta is proportional to 1 over theta squared. So that tells you it's alpha is log theta. You will get here an e to the minus 2 alpha. So it looks like this. There is this constant. So to eliminate this constant, you subtract another log of another theta function that cancels the constant. And the other thing is that, so it has to be this theta function, but you want this guy squared here. So you need to take integral between these two equal. That means that twice this has to be a period of the theta function, so that these two are equal. So this interval is half a period. And if you then you get that a solution of the Cauchy coordinate equation in this way. And this interval with the theta function with the argument shifted, we call for simplicity theta hat. And morally speaking, this is like sine, let's say, and this is just shifted by half a period, so it will be like a cosine. So cosine and sine are the same function shifted by half a period or quarter a period or something. And then this is similar. So morally speaking, it's like sort of a tangent, but okay, it's with theta function. And the dependence on z and z bar appears here because here you have derivatives like gradients in these directions. And you want to convert those in derivatives with respect to z and z bar. So you put zeta as a linear combination of these constant vectors. If I derive with respect to z, I get gradient in direction 3, which is this d3. And if I derive with respect to z bar, I get dp1. So this guy becomes dd bar. And that's how you get that equation. So it's very straightforward, although you get to be familiar with the properties of these functions, but it's not, once you have the identities, you just use them. Okay, I'm not going to show how to solve the other equations, but it goes the same way. Once you have alpha, you have to solve a linear equation for the a's, and you can see that it looks like the first derivatives of the theta functions, and you find the correct theta functions by adjusting the coefficient. So after you have done that, you find the solutions that I mentioned before, and you want to compute the area. And this is the functional for the area once all the constraints are satisfied, and this is solution of the equation of motion. I compute the area by integrating this, which just is the integral of e to the 2 alpha. So I only need to know alpha to compute this, and this was the ratio of the theta functions. There is a caveat that the actual area is infinite because of this 1 over z squared in the metric. So when the surface touches the boundary, that small region near the boundary has infinite area. So in ADS-CFT, the recipe to map to the Wilson loop is to cut the surface at a certain height epsilon and compute the area only up to epsilon. And take epsilon to zero, you see that the area is the length of the boundary curve divided by epsilon plus some finite part. And actually, this finite part, or plus things that go to zero when epsilon goes to zero. And this finite part is the thing that is actually dual to the Wilson loop. And if you put the equations for e to the 2 alpha here, you can see that e to the 2 alpha is a constant plus the Laplacian of a function. And you can use Stokes' theorem to integrate that. And you get the expression for the area as a contour integral over the edge of the worksheet. And this is n, is an integer, which is, we call it here the winding number. The curve is not wound around anything, but if you take the tangent to a curve and you follow it around the curve, the tangent moves in the unit circle and can go many times around the center. So if the curve is like this or whatever, and this is this integer n. And with this a, one can compute the expectation value of the Wilson loop, which as I said was a very difficult calculation to do in the field theory. Now, when you look at integral systems and you want to compute the energy, for example, angular momentum or other things like that, they are related to this infinite number of conserved quantities that integral system have. But this comes all from the monodromy matrix, which is the integration of the holonomy of the flat current around some non-trivial loop. But if you have a surface that looks like this, there are no non-trivial loops. So we don't have any formula for the area in terms of the monodromy matrix, for example. It would be interesting to see if there is some way to do that. There is something analogous, and I don't know how to call it, why I'm calling it analogous, but it's up to you. I'm just describing a way to compute now the area in an alternative way, which to me has some flavor of the approach of we're using the monodromy matrix, but I don't know. Let me just describe how it works, and you can decide if it's analogous or not. But it goes like this. So suppose you have a curve in this space, and I just found the surface associated with this. I found actually more. So these coordinates are x and y. I can take a complex number x, and x as a function of sigma give me this curve. But I have remember this psi, which depends on lambda. So I can define a generalized x sigma of lambda. So I can define a curve for any value of lambda. If lambda has modulus 1, then this is an actual curve that I can find the dual surface to it. If lambda is a complex number, it's some generalization. And one can ask how does this curve changes when I change lambda. And using these theta functions, it's very easy to write x is just this expression here, where lambda the lambda dependence is in this mu, and nu, and this point 4 on the Riemann surface is actually the same point lambda. So one can move lambda and see how this curve changes. And in particular, this Riemann surface, I remind you again, this Riemann surface is just an auxiliary surface that I'm using to parameterize the surface. The surface always has the topology of a disk. But this lambda, I can move it in the Riemann surface. The lambda lives in the Riemann surface, and I can make it cross a cut. If lambda crosses a cut, x goes, one can see that goes to 1 over x. And the reason is that when you change the sheets in the Riemann surface, this integral becomes minus itself, so the numerator and denominator are interchanged. And therefore, this x is not an invariant description of the curve. But actually, that is expected because this theory is conformal invariant, so all the curves that are related to each other by a conformal symmetry should have should be actually considered as the same curve. In particular, an inversion should not change physically, it should be correspond to the same curve. So we would like to write the area not exactly as a function of the shape of the curve, but as a function of something which is conformal invariant. And one thing that is conformal invariant, which is, I guess, was also mentioned in some of the other talks, was the, is the Schwarzschild derivative. So the Schwarzschild derivative of x with respect to lambda, or for example, sigma, are invariant under a conformal transformation. And one can see from the expression of x that I had before, so this expression, and we don't have any deeper understanding of that, it's just an identity that one can show. If you take the Schwarzschild derivative with respect to lambda and essentially look at the residue at lambda of this one over lambda, so the constant part of this when lambda goes to zero, and you integrate around the boundary of the worksheet, you get again the area. And I chose here n is chosen to be 1 because it's just a simple contour. Now one can say, okay, but I also need to know this dz bar because this is how I parameterize the worksheet. So I need to know how z bar depends on sigma to be able to compute this integral. So I don't need only the shape of a contour as a function of lambda, but also the actual z as a function of lambda. But it turns out that if you take x and you do the Schwarzschild derivative with respect to sigma now, and look at the pole in lambda, this precisely gives you the d sigma of z bar that you need to put there to do the integral. So the Schwarzschild derivatives determine completely the area. And notice that there is no theta function here. So we found this by putting the theta functions, but we expect this formula to be give you the area for any x of lambda. So if you know x as a function of lambda and from some way, you can plug it here and you should get the area. Although, as I said, we don't have a proof of that. The only thing we have is that for all this infinite parameter family of solutions, this formula works. Okay, so now I want to describe some concrete examples to show that this actually gives something. And I'm going to consider the simplest non-trivial example, which is a case of 4 cuts. So there is some technical reason why you need an even number of cuts. So you can have 2, which I'm going to discuss actually later, or 4 as the simplest case. So 4, I put the cuts some places. You have some non-trivial cycles, and you can compute the period matrix numerically. It gives some numbers here, and I can put it in the theta functions and plot the surfaces. Now, the first question is, where is what curve does this surface end on? And for that, I have to see where the z, which was the height, vanishes. So the vanishing height means the boundary. And you can see, if you look at the expression for z, that z vanishes whenever this function theta hat that I defined before as a theta with the argument shift is 0. So we can plot with Mathematica just the contours of theta equals 0, or with Maple. And you find these lines here. For example, if you take this inside of this line z will be 0. So the inside here will map to a surface that ends on this curve. And the outside here will map to a surface that ends on all these curves plus this curve. So you will map into a surface that ends in an infinite number of curves. And we're going to discuss that later. But for the moment, I just want to look at the inside. And each of these provides a surface, but they are actually all the same. And if I change the parameters of the Riemann surface, so I change the position of the cuts, this will change shape, and you will have different solutions. And the other thing is that there was a spectral parameter lambda that I can also change. So lambda, I can take it as any point in the unit circle, and the shape will change. So I will have, by fixing the cuts and then taking different values of lambda, I can take curves, find curves of different shape, and I can find the surfaces ending on those curves. And these surfaces are plotted here in Mathematica, but they are analytical. I just want to emphasize that. The other point is that if you look at the expression for the area that I had before, lambda doesn't appear. And it turns out that that means simply that these two curves, although they look different, the surface that ends on them has the same area. So is that somewhat expected? I mean, the area is one number, you know, have infinite ways of deforming a curve, so there has to be an infinite number of ways to deform a curve without changing the area. But the point is that we identify the one parameter family where we explicitly know that the area doesn't change. And one can ask, how does the curve change if lambda, as lambda moves along the unit circle? So these are just two particular points, and here I have a movie that shows you how the curve changes. So it's a bit sketchy at some points, but there you see. So all these curves, the dual surface has, the minimal area surface has the same area. So this defines somehow a flow, if you wish, in the space of curves up to conformal transformation. So this surface is actually at some point, these curves go to infinity, but all is up to a conformal transformation. So you have to conformally transform back, and that explains these glitches because the computer doesn't like that too much. But you have to know these curves are all defined up to a conformal transformation. And we also do not understand very well how this flow works. So this flow probably obeys some kind of differential equation, but we don't know what that equation is. So the way we plot this is just look at this x of sigma and change the value of lambda and plot the curve. But there has to be some differential equation that this obeys, and if you know that, maybe you can find this flow directly without having to solve all these theta functions or anything, and that probably will allow you to find the area of those curves. So now let me show you, we computed the area, and just to be sure, we did it in two different ways. One, using the formula that I gave before, and the other simply by integrating over two dimensions, computing the actual area. In that case, you need to put a cut at some value of epsilon, and if you multiply the area by epsilon, you should get the length plus this finite part times epsilon. And okay, my students computed all these values of epsilon. You see very good straight line here, where the intercept at the origin is the length, and the slope is the finite area that agrees perfectly with the other computation using the Riemann theta function. And here, one can notice that this value is smaller than minus 2 pi, and it's good because of the following theorem. So suppose you are in the plane, in the usual plane, and they give you a curve of finite of fixed length. And they ask you to deform the curve until the area that is enclosed is maximal. So you know that the solution is a circle. So the circle is the curve that encircles the most area. And you can ask the same in ADS. So in ADS, you can put a curve in the boundary with fixed length. If the length is fixed, this part of the area will be fixed, so you have to concentrate on this. And you can ask, what happens if I deform the curve? How can I have a largest area? But area now in ADS. And Alexis and Mazzeo prove that the curve that encircles the most area is again the circle, the same as in flat space. And the area for the circle is minus 2 pi. So it's not that the area is negative, because the area is the whole sum of these two, but it means that it's slightly less than this part that is going to infinity. So this AF is minus 2 pi for the circle, and it has to be smaller for any other curve that you find, and in this is smaller. It's not much smaller, because these curves, as you have seen, look like the small deformations of the circle. If you take a circle and you stretch it very much in one direction, then you can see that the area goes to minus infinity. So there is no lower bound. So the area goes from minus 2 pi all the way to minus infinity. But if you get a value larger than minus 2 pi, then it would be a problem. How much time do I have? Like 20 minutes or 10 minutes? 3 minutes? 15 minutes. Okay. I thought you said 3. Yeah, but I don't have too much more anyway. So, okay. And I promised to look at the simplest case of G equals 1. So why didn't I discuss that first? Well, the case is that it's too simple. So by some symmetries, one can see that for G equals 1, there is only, well, you have to put two cuts, And there is only one moduli parameter, which is modular parameter, which is this A. So you put one cut from A to infinity, and the other from minus 1 over A to 0. And you can see how the solutions look like. And there are two cases. When A is larger than 1, you get two circles. And when A is smaller than 1, you get the cusp. And these solutions were already studied by Dracker and Fiol, and as I said, by Dracker, Gross, and Oguri. And there is a caveat here that in this case, if you put an arbitrary value of lambda of modulus 1, you get a spiral curve. So you don't get a periodic curve with like two circles here. So you need to choose lambda equals to 1 here and minus 1 to get the cusp. And the particular case of A going to 1, the cusp angle goes to 0, and that corresponds to two parallel lines. So this construction includes the two parallel lines that I discussed at the beginning as a limiting case. And when A goes to 0, theta goes to pi, that's a straight line. And the area in that case is 0, after you subtract the infinity. The other curious thing that was already noticed by Dracker and Fiol is that here, for the two circles, you have two solutions. Actually, one that is closer to the boundary, and one that goes tries to go to the center. In the limit where the two circles coincide, are very close to each other, this the one that is close to the boundary looks like the two parallel curves, and the other one looks like the two half spheres on top of each other. Okay, so what we said is let's perturb these solutions and try to find more generic cases where you have two curves, one inside the other, but that they don't look like circles anymore. And you cannot perturb anything in the two cuts, so what we did is add small cuts to the case of two cuts, going back to genus 3, so actually the same case I discussed before. And indeed, we could do that. We had very small cuts, and we found correlation functions of Wilson loops with many different shapes. So again, all these surfaces are analytical, and they previously only, and there is an infinite parameters family of these things. Before, the only solution that was known of this type was two circles, as I was saying. And how does the worksheet look? So the worksheet is this sigma and tau, Z and Z bar. And now, remember there was these circles here that give you the other curve, so we look at this case works when these circles don't exist anymore. So if you look here, you have this curve, and then there is another curve here, and these circles are absent. So you have to change the parameters so that these circles disappear, and then you keep just the region of the worksheet between these two curves. One of these curves corresponds to one of these, and the other to the other. And the theta function has periodicity here, so this is periodic. But we have to use all these periods. And the reason is that if you remember the expression for x, which was here, we want this x to be periodic, but there is an exponential and a theta function. So the theta function has some periodicity, and the exponential, you have to convert it into e to the I phi, so there is some reality condition there. But this e to the I phi has a different periodicity generically. So you have to match the periodicity of the two things. For the case of one cut, essentially this e to the I phi gives you the circle. So we give you two circles. But when you put the other cuts, you have to match the periodicity of the theta functions to the periodicity of the circle. And you can match, for example, 5 periods of the theta function to 1 period of the circle and things like that. And that's how you get these different surfaces, by matching the different periodicity of the theta function with 1 periodicity of the circle. You can match a 1 periodicity of the theta function to 2 periods of the circle, and then you get a curve that intersect each other. So we can do that too, but we don't see the purpose of doing all the, the cases in principle. And the other thing is that the formula for the area is still valid. Now this n integer is 0 because one curve goes one way and the other goes the other. So it doesn't appear here, but the rest is the same. This is the area of the worksheet, this is a constant, and this is an integral over these two curves, and you have to subtract them. Now there is a non-trivial monodromy here because this is like a cylinder, so this is one a cover of the cylinder, this is the one below, so you can integrate along this period and get a monodromy matrix, but we don't know for the moment if there is any relation between this monodromy matrix and this area, so we need to look at also that. So there is some, I mean, this part is something we still haven't published, so it's work in progress. Okay, so now let me discuss something slightly different, which is a numerical approach that we can use directly without using any integrability or any analytical thing that I just discussed to find this minimal area surface. And this is a bit elementary, but since we did it, let me describe for you anyway how it works. So we took an hexagonal lattice here, made out of triangles, and each of these orange curves we map to a curve of constant z or constant height in the surface. And first, so this outer curve will be mapped first to some height epsilon, because we need to cut the surface at some epsilon, and then to the shape of the curve whose minimal area surface dual we want to find. And the interior curves are mapped to some guess of how the surface looks like. And afterwards, we move the position of each of these vertices, trying to minimize the area of the surface, but keeping the condition that these have equal height. And the tip, the center here, is the top of the curve. We move the curve sideways or upwards and down, moving the whole surface, again trying to find a minimum. And after doing that for all vertices, we go back and do it again and again until this converges to some solution. How do we define the area? Well, for each of these triangles, we will have I don't know if you see it, but it's a triangle here in ADS. And it's not the actual ADS triangle in the sense that these are not geodesics. These are just straight lines, but that's much better for the computer. So given a triangle like that with straight lines in ADS, one can compute the area exactly by integrating the area, the expression for the area. And you get the area of the flat triangle, which is base times height divided by 2, times a function of the z, so the height in ADS. And we are assuming here, from what I said before, each triangle has two vertices that have the same height by the way we define this lattice. So these two have the same height, and this could be above or below, it doesn't really matter. And this is the exact expression for the area of this triangle inside ADS. And the approximate area of the surface is the sum of the area of all triangles, which in the limit of very small triangles, they should agree. So let me show you, take here a break, and let me show you how this program works, just to see. So this is a curve, and I can see this, let me see it from below. So there is from below. So that plane is the z equals 0 plane. Probably you don't remember, but this is one of the curves. This curve is one of the curves that we found using the theta functions. It corresponds to lambda equals to minus 1 plus I over square root of 2. Okay, so we go back and look at the surface from above now. And now I start trying to find the minimal area surface. So I go like this. I mean, obviously this is not how you do it, but it is just to show the computer can do it by itself. Okay, that's what the computer thinks has the smallest possible area. It looks like that. And I can go here and see what the value of the area is, and it's minus 6. Well, okay, if you don't see it. But I can say it's minus 6.53. And the theta functions gave us minus 6.59. So I get around 1% a good approximation with just this very simple iteration that we did just right now. And so this is a check of both. One is the program, and the other is this computation using the Riemann theta functions. It's actually the minimal area surface. It's not some extreme or something funny. Now, with the computer, obviously, I can put any curve that I want, which is not the case with the theta functions. And I hear, curiously, I have just an ellipsis. So this is an ellipsis which has is 4 times longer than wide, and say curiously because it's a very simple curve, and numerically I can do it, but with the theta functions I don't know how to do this. So it's an interesting problem, open problem, to see if given an arbitrary curve, one can find an approximation using the Riemann theta functions for any curve. So I don't know how to do that. And here, okay, I can again iterate, and okay, the computer thinks that that's the minimal area surface. And I can see what the area is, and it says minus 11.25, but I don't have any way to verify that that's correct, other than this numerical calculation, because as I said, I don't know how to do this with the theta function. So it will be an interesting problem. It's an interesting problem to see how to compute the area of an arbitrary curve, at least with some regularity conditions. Presumably, one can say if I keep adding cuts and cuts, there is some sort of way in which I can approximate some arbitrary curve, but I don't know if that's true. And even if it's true, I don't know what algorithm one should use to do that. Okay, so I guess I'm getting to the end of my talk, so maybe a little bit ahead of time. But okay, so the conclusions then are that we started by reviewing the duality between Wilson loops and minimal area surfaces in the hyperbolic space, and argue that this, from a physical point of view, because of the IDSTFT correspondence, is an interesting problem, but also mathematically, the problem of finding minimal area surface is a very active mathematical problem since, calculus was invented, but still people work on this in different metrics or different conditions, or also constant curvature surfaces and things like that. It's also interesting, as I said, in computer graphics, in another dynamics of cell membranes and different areas. For our particular case, we are interested in surfaces in hyperbolic space, and we argue that there is an infinite parameter family of solutions that describes an infinite parameter family of curves whose dual surface we can describe analytically. And moreover, there is a one parameter family of deformations that one can write explicitly in such a way that the area doesn't change. And this area can be computed as a contour integral over the boundary of this worksheet, and it has some expression in terms of this Schwarzschild derivative that it would be nice to understand better. We also find a worksheet with a topology of a cylinder that connects two closed curves, and we show them explicitly, and that should compute correlators of two Wilson loops. And finally, we are starting to use a numerical approach that, in principle, for the moment, was just used to check what I discussed before. But if you improve this program, presumably one can use it to find the area precisely for arbitrary curves. And also, there are programs that compute minimal area surfaces in flat space and in other conditions, which I don't think we can use here, but can be interesting to explore. Some of them can even change the topology of the surface and things like that. So it will be interesting if those things can be used here too. And the final summary is that I believe these integrability properties of minimal area surfaces, and that's just not us, as I said, many other groups here are working on this topic. It's a very beautiful subject that deserves some more further study. So that's all I have to say.
Questions or comments?
If all surfaces? No. Which minimal surfaces? These are minimal surfaces in ADS. If all minimal surfaces, yes, that I don't know. No, that's an open question. So you have an infinite parameter family because you can take the cuts of the Riemann surface in an arbitrary way. So you have the number of cuts and the positions of those. So you have it's an infinite parameter. But it's not obvious that they have kind of any, I don't think you can exactly reproduce a curve, but the question will be if you can approximate any curve to the degree that you want, and I don't even have an answer for that. So, but yeah, that's a very interesting open problem because it's probably the main open problem on this.
If there are no further questions, let's thank Martin and all the other speakers.
I guess as the last speaker, I think we should also thank all the organizers for their hard work on putting together this conference. And Pedro and Spiro.